Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. And a big week of footy has just passed. We've got our final four for the boys and the girls. And Jonty, you've got a question to kick it off. And I've heard this question because I've had to have time to think about it, but it is quite hilarious.
I've given you about 30 seconds to have a think about this. We've got Cench, AFL Central and Baseline having a fight on November 23rd, I believe, which captured a little bit of attention on Monday evening. And it'll be a great event, actually. But on the back of that, which talent league player would you least like to take on in the ring? I'll give my answer first. My answer is Alex Tarrou, because I think if he spends some time in the gym and really prepared for the fight, he's got a high pain tolerance and has a great competitive streak, so I would not want to take him on.
Well, mine's Josh Murphy.
Yeah.
Because the bloke's just built.
Yeah.
And there'd be a lot of players. I don't think if I had to take on every single player, I might come out the winner once or twice.
Yeah.
that's how much I don't rate myself. Who do you actually tip though for Baseline and Cench?
Baseline, pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I've got no clue. I can't actually tell what the vibe of this match will even be, but I'll stick with Baseline as well. But big week of footy just gone, and we've got our final four left. We've got our main talking points. We've seen most of the boys' games, seen a few girls' games as well. So we've got a lot to talk about, and I guess we'll start, I guess, from the Saturday. So this was the two country boys games, and I guess the theme of the day was who stood up when it mattered most. So Rebels came up big. I think they kicked 6 goals in the fourth quarter to roll Geelong in the end, which was massive because I think there was a – I thought there'd be a mental thing there. They haven't been them all year, and Geelong just seemed to beat them with system, and the Rebels just came up big. You know, Ollie Hannaford was there to stand up and kicked a few goals in the last quarter, and then you had Gippy, who were really making a charge in that game against Dandy. They faced a 42-0 deficit, but just couldn't get the job done. But I'll throw to you first. Yeah, players in this draft crop that just have that sense of standing up, they're clutch in that sense, but, you know, obviously a bit more specific from these two games, but even the whole weekend.
Yeah, so I'll give you a few players. I think Ollie Hannaford is one, clearly, who has shown now on repeated occasions that when it's there to be one, he will come to the party and the pressure increases, and that's what his game's built around, isn't it? It's pressure and tenacity, and it really shows out when the game's on the line. Cooper Hines is another one. So Gippy were coming really hard, and Dandenong needed a stabiliser to start the last quarter. He kicks a goal from 50 from the centre clearance. I thought that just summed up Cooper Hines's year in a nutshell, and then with about a minute to play, he won a crucial centre clearance on the wing, which got them crucial territory as well. So a couple of big moments from Cooper Hines. Only had the 15 touches, but some big moments late. Jack O on the weekend, really good early and really good late. I thought his game was quite strong when the game was on the line. And then a couple of others I'll touch on. Jagger Smith is obviously so consistent, but that competitiveness really shines through when it matters. And Xavier Lindsay as well. I think when Gippy have won some close games this year, he's always had to have a big say as the protagonist of that midfield group.
Well, that end to the Northern Oakley game was fascinating. And I watched this back half on stream. Kobe Askew with the final goal. They were that close, Oakley, from the recruiter's nightmare, let's be said, that if Oakley got knocked out there, but pretty valiant from Northern. Even Seb Murphy on the other end for Northern, I thought he was terrific up forward to kick them when it mattered, and another kind of windy-ish day at Port Melbourne. So weather wasn't really good at all. But move to our next talking point, and staying on the track of the Rebels-Falcons game was Reece Unwin, who I think alarmingly looking at it from a stats perspective, his season looks pretty poor, but I think this game in general summarized how well he can perform at his best. He's only kicked 3-12 for the year. Now, one of those performances was 0-5 against Oakley a couple of weeks ago. So I guess that's just the one you can put to the side. But he hasn't been hitting the scoreboard as much as he'd like. But I thought this game really showed that he doesn't need to be that prototype small forward. He is able to push further up the ground. Yeah. He uses it quite well. And he was consistent. He was there over every quarter. He seemed to stand up and do something really nice in transition as well. I don't know, what were your thoughts about his game, and was that something that can propel him a little bit more?
Yeah, I still think he's had a pretty good season because he's shown the AFL traits in terms of he's really hard to tackle, he's good through traffic, and he's clean below his knees. But I thought we saw it in a much more consistent way than we have previously on the weekend. And like you said, it was good that he got to show his aerobic capacity because we think he's going to be a small forward at the next level, but he obviously played through the midfield on Saturday, and he also took some kick-ins as well. So, yeah, hit his targets, and they, you know, they trusted him by foot. And you know, he really did set some transition play up with those kick-ins as well. So, yeah, it was a really good game from him, and I think he'd be hard to pass up. Would that be the knee-jerk reaction at the draft?
The way I've been thinking about players now, and you get closer to the draft time, would you pick this player
over
above
Joe Berry?
Well, it's not even that. It's like, would you pick him over 55 other players? Yeah. That's the way I think about it. And I guess the issue with, you know, this podcast is we obviously don't focus on the interstate as much. So our side of mind is just the Vic boys a lot. So do I think, including the WA, including the SA, your Queensland picks, does he get there before them? I'm still undecided. Okay. I think a big performance this week, and if they get to the grand final, like, I do think that almost does project him.
And that's another talking point. It's so important for these teams where we talk about teams not having a focus on win-loss throughout the year, but it is so important to try and win games and finals if you can, because these extra one or two performances can be so critical for draft prospects. And it's good to see four teams that are loaded with lots of draft prospects in Dandenong, GWV, Oakley and Sandy all get the chance to play 100%. At least three postseason games. The next one we'll talk about, I just want to profile some bottom majors who shone. So Brody Atkins is one who has got some midfield time for Gippy. He's been really important because Gippy don't have the star power in the midfield of some other teams, but he works really hard and has got good stoppage craft. Tom Matthews in the last couple of weeks has been really good. I think you thought he was one of the better performers, Nathan, part of that fleet-footed Gippsland forward line.
Yeah, he was awesome. That high-flying nature he has for a smaller forward really takes you by surprise every time. He nearly took a game-winning, but I think it was one of the second last inside 50 entry with about 45 seconds left, and he flies up and it just drops out of his hands. And it was so cool being right there in that pocket, but just drops it. But even we saw it the week before against Murray, where he takes that mark late and seals the game. So a lot of pop and a lot of, you know, energy from a player like that. Exciting to watch.
Yep, just 170 centimetres, so that leap really important. Harley Hicks played the best game I've seen him play at the level. He's got a lot of energy and speed, and he's another one that's a little bit hard to tackle as well. I think in the forward half, he can cause a lot of headaches for opposition teams. Finished with a couple of goals and set plenty more up.
Yeah, he did. He's one that I'm still excited to see where the growth factor is with him, where he develops his real point of difference as a small forward. But we know he's got that electricity and energy, and kicked a really nice goal as well on the weekend from, what was it, about 50 metres out.
Yeah, chiseling sort of nice finisher. Grime Myers almost kicking action. And Jack Circuit, another one. I think Archie Butler's going to get all the accolades the next couple of years for the 2026 crop from Sandy. But Jack Circuit, not far below him. Speaking to some people around Sandy, they really love his team first attitude. His pressure and his off the ball work is second to none. He didn't have a heap of the ball on the weekend, but playing off half forward, I thought he was involved in some really damaging plays, so that was good to see. Next talking point returns to the GWV versus Geelong game. Xavier Ivicic, he is one who put together a really strong season. He didn't really put a foot wrong, and we're gonna talk about the players whose seasons have come to an end soon. But just quickly, his position at the next level, as you see it, is a sort of skinnily built player.
I see it as a half forward. Because he proved this year he can run himself through the mid, and we saw that at the champs. Do I think that's his spot at the next level? Probably not. Probably just that half forward, but can roll in occasionally. He's got that speed and aggressiveness in his game where you can rely on him to win a few stoppages or go in and be impactful. But I mean, I feel like we haven't seen him a lot at half forward this year. Like, it's just been a lot in the middle, but that's probably where I see it. Do you?
Yeah, I think Geelong have needed him in the middle. Him and Eden Ibbotson have really carried that midfield group. But I think he's a midfielder. And I think that's a contrasting call to what a lot of people say. But that innate silkiness in traffic that not a lot of players have to sort of make time slow down around them is something that can't be taught. And I think his best footy, if he gets there, is once he's spent a couple of pre-seasons in the gym and he's got that strength to really match it with AFL seasoned bodies, and he can really use that ability to dance through traffic. So I actually think he's a midfielder at the next level, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out out. Hopefully he gets drafted. Now, the Sandy game against Calder was one that I always felt like it was going to break open because Calder were missing a few of their best players and Sandy probably just had too much depth of top-end talent for them. Luke Kennedy was a key part of that. He's one who I think in other talent league programs would be seen as a top three, top five player in the program. At Sandy, there's so much star power that he probably doesn't get the accolades he deserves. However, he will be significant if Sandy are to win the premiership, I think, because his two-way running really stood out on the weekend. What he does enables Levi Ashcroft to thrive. It enables Murphy Reid to do what he does so well. His gut running and his willingness to do some of the dirty work has really impressed me, and particularly on the weekend. Didn't have a lot of touches, but I still thought he was one of the more influential players on the ground.
Well, I've been a big fan of Luke Kennedy, and that's based off the fact that he's so good defensively, and you rate those players who value two-way running quite a lot, and Sandy are a very offensive side. That's what the trends do show us this year. But I look at someone like Cooper Lord last year, and Luke Kennedy just feels like he's slotted right into that role. And maybe that's a Rob Harding thing where he just finds one of those gems and puts them in that role. But, yeah, he will be super significant. I mean, if they do get through to the grand final and they play a team like Oakley, he's probably the most important player on the field if you just go back a couple of weeks ago to see what Oakley did to them. So he'll definitely be important this weekend, and if they get further than that, then it'll be exciting to see what he does, you know, in the grand final. So.
Well, it's interesting you say he's got that Cooper Lord storyline about him, because clearly he's got similarities in his game, but he also missed the Sandy squad in his bottom age season the same way Cooper Lord did, and actually won a best and fairest playing senior footy for Ormond in the VAFA, the strongest competition in local footy in Victoria. So that's a huge testament to his work rate. Obviously, butt down, head up, butt up, head down, whatever the saying is, and got onto Sandy's list. Another Sandringham Dragon, who I thought played an underrated game on the weekend, was Adrian Cole. He doesn't lose too many one-on-ones. When Luke Traynor went down with an injury and they sort of cautiously rested him in the end, I think there were some concerns it might have been concussion, but I think it was just more precautionary after a head knock. But Adrian Cole's role became a lot more important as a leader of the back line with no Luke Traynor. And I just thought it'd be good to raise the question. We've sort of peaked and troughed on him. Where do you see him sitting in key back talks at the moment?
Well, I feel like he's in a good position regardless because he's St Kilda NGA, right?
Yep.
So they have first bid to him as far as I'm concerned. So I do think they'll take him regardless of kind of how his season ends. They got rid of James Van Ness. They delisted him. So I feel like that spot just opens up.
And it'll be interesting whether they take Adrian Cole or Lenny Hoffman. Obviously, they've got access to both of them. They do need some reinforcements down back regardless.
If you're looking for someone who could come in and slot into the level as quickly as possible, Cole's probably your first option. I think he's proven that a little more than Hoffman has. Obviously, he hasn't played as much this year, Hoffman. But
he's rawer as well.
Yeah, so you've got that factor as well, but I do think a club will take him regardless. Mm-hmm. I think his season's proven. He can match it against some good opponents. He's had some poor performances, but I think his ability to back it up and turn things around quickly is something that's in his favour. That's just a good mindset thing as well. He's often able to turn around poor performances quite quickly.
Yeah, he is. The only concern I've got about it is his kicking. Some people will say, well, that's something that can be coached at the next level, but that's clearly the concern in his game, is whether his skills are going to be able to reach that point of someone like a Lenny Hoffman, who is clearly a little bit rawer. Yes, but his one-on-one work and his athleticism is really hard to fault and holds itself really well for a key post at the next level. You watched a couple of the girls' games on the weekend, the country doubleheader, Sasha White and Mika Morrissey, a couple of Geelong Falcons who caught your eye in their win over Tassie. Mika Morrissey, a winger from the Falcons, and Sasha White, a half forward.
Yeah, both who I thought were really good, and Geelong totally steamrolled Tassie. There was a strong wind at Shepley, but Geelong just kicked well against the wind, which is what got them over the line in the end, but pretty comfortably. I think they won by 29. But both those performances, I thought, just showed really good aspects of just point of difference in general. And Sasha White, while she's not a big accumulator of the footy, she makes good use of every touch she has. She's so opportunistic. Her first touch, or I think her second touch, it's a snap inside 50, whether it's a loose ball, it's a goal. Like, she makes such good use of the footy. She attacks the footy with such aggression and puts her head over it just like that without second thought. Her vision as well inside 50 I thought was terrific. Her work rate is constantly there. So I feel like while she doesn't get the accolades of what a Sarah Howley would in that team, who is your best ball winner, she's always there with different aspects on the day that I think push Falcons over the line.
That vision inside 50 that you touched on, that's something I've really noticed with her. I think when she gets the ball 50 metres out, you can trust her to make the right decision and send it to dangerous spots. And she links up really well. That's what I've really liked about her. Mika Morrissey is obviously had some attention for a couple of years, obviously probably the best winger in this draft crop, and is really fit, and I think her ball use has been really good as well.
Yeah, it has improved her ball use. That was probably the one question I've had at times. I swear every time I watch Geelong, they're either really off it or like really on, so yep. I haven't really seen that balance this year, but in a game like this where everything is working really well, she was terrific with her hands just in contest. In transition, that running capacity really comes to the fore, and she's so good, so speedy. Agile as well, under pressure, so was showing that side of her game. The offensive work rate was there, kicked a really nice goal on the run from 40 metres out. So, again, just, like Saisha White, they provide little things that I feel like some teams don't have. You look at your Oakleys, your Dandenongs, they're amazing, but they could, you could take both those players and put them in. They'd be really impactful wherever they are. So two really good performances there.
The key word you associate with finals is pressure. Tassie didn't get the win, but Misha Barwin really rose to that pressure, Nathan.
Yeah, she 100% did. She's one that really just took me from the first minute of that game. I think she laid 13 tackles in the end or 11. It was a game high at the very least, and she had speed in her game as well, but that consistent pressure all day when Tassie were getting peppered inside 50 pretty much the whole first quarter, she was always there to stand up. A really exciting prospect, I feel like, for next year, and she uses the ball quite well. And in pretty poor, windy conditions, she was there to stand up for Tassie all day, I thought.
And Dandenong were far too good for Gippsland in the end. I think Gippsland pushed them for a quarter, and then Dandenong really utilised the wind in that game. But Michaela Bloom, another player whose pressure was really strong. She's played at both ends this year, got a game for Vic Country, and her improvement's been really strong.
Yeah, she was awesome. Again, with Barwin, that's something I try to take out of these games. It's just those players who give you that extra little bit that you don't expect, and that pressure game is so important. But across the ground, she was there, defensive 50, forward 50, right in the middle. She was bringing tackle pressure all day. Even her movement patterns in transition, I thought, were really, really well timed and ran really well. And all day, she just stood up. I don't think she only had 10 touches in the end. So the stats wouldn't reflect a massive day out, but the little things, I think, would be reflected in your coaches' meetings and your team reviews. Ash Centra had 35, was pretty much running that Gippy midfield during the day, and it was pretty evident early on that things just weren't going Gippy's way, and they lost to him 2 weeks ago, and I think they just knew it was inevitable that Dandy were going to run over the top of him. And Ali Simmons and Kayla Dalgleish, two really good offensive performances, I thought, as well.
Yeah, very well summed up. So we've got our prelim finalists set. We will do a preview of those prelim finals soon, but our exit meeting, so we did this last week where we basically give a very snappy overview of each of the players who finished their Coates Talent League seasons, and we'll start with the Northern boys. So like you said, it was a very gallant effort against Oakley, but they just couldn't quite hold on in the end with Kobe Askew kicking that late goal. Jesse Dettoli is the first one we'll look at. I thought he improved as the season went on, followed up a strong national championships with really good form at the back end for Gippy to put himself in top 30 conversations.
Yeah, 100% did. He's one that has to have pushed himself up to like top 20 by now. Almost, he's been so impressive, and it just keeps getting better and better. I don't know why I had such doubts on him at the champs. I didn't feel like it was that good, but I think in reflection, I've probably learned that he did quite well given the talent around him. Maybe I just expected a Northern Jesse Dettoli straight into a Vic Metro side, but he was awesome.
Yeah, no, certainly. Tom Sims, I thought his season faded late, but he'd already by that point proven his contested marking and forward craft at both Coates and National Championships level, so a tick overall.
I think a tick overall. I do think he was quieter in the back end of the year. He went off with an ankle injury in the start of the third of the Oakley game, so didn't get to see a full game run out. I just question his consistency across four quarters. I feel like at times he can go missing just a little bit, but he's for it's what he's worth,
yeah.
you can take him.
Yeah, certainly. Gabriel Stumpf, who was alongside Tom Sims all year in the forward line, kicks more than 20 goals across the Talent League season. I think he's a bit of a tease player who never played that statement game, but proved he's certainly got AFL attributes.
Agree. Has traits, but I don't know if he's put together the season to suggest he gets drafted.
Zach Johnson was a clear victim of Vic Metro's surplus of midfielders, but he had a very productive season, probably without absolutely establishing himself as a draft lock.
I'd have to agree. I still think the value of him, you can't pass up on him on the draft. Again, this is the whole, does he go before 60 others? Yep. I do think he does. That's where I sit with him.
Gippsland, Xavier Lindsay, he stood up in the hottest game of the year, and either side of that, it was a very consistent campaign overall across a few different positions.
Still stand by as the smartest player in the draft class and continue to prove it this year.
Certainly. Alex Tarrou hardly put a foot wrong once he got a consistent run of it after injuries and looks to be a first rounder now with his competitiveness.
Yeah, he almost carried that kippy to not carry, but you know, he was that main man. He just became, put himself in that position and said, I'll take the game on myself and be that person to win you a game almost. He was awesome, wasn't he?
And it was amazing that game on the weekend that Gippy lost. It felt like he put down a few marks and missed a few shots on goal, but he was still probably one of their most influential players on the ground, despite probably by his own standards having a little bit of an off day. Asher Eastham played with a terrific mindset, I thought, following his Vic Country admission, and showed his marking for Gippy, which has kept him there or thereabouts in draft conversations.
Yeah, I do think it has. His size definitely helps. I did enjoy when he went down back in the later end of the season, just showed a little bit of versatility on his end and can get up and take some pretty good marks. So I think if it's not this year, he's definitely got next year. He's that type of player that you've got a lot of scope still left in him.
And Ricky Mentha showed X factor and then versatility late in the season without being as consistent as he would have liked to have been.
Yeah, he's a hard one to analyse. I didn't agree with the change down back. I still think his best assets are up forward, and it was against Rebels, you know, a couple of weeks back. They put him up forward. He kicks two goals in the last quarter, so almost have that, I wish he just got a bit more time, but that versatility does help.
Hmm. Calder, Jaden Ewan, I think his season peaked and troughed like few others, but he had the last month that he really needed, I think, to keep himself right in draft conversations with that VFL match for Essendon really important.
100%. I think he got thrown into the deep end really early, which might not have helped him with the academy call up and didn't play as well as he would have liked in that game. And maybe it threw his confidence off a little, but he has picked it up really well in the back end.
Yep. Harry O'Farrell had a frustrating season of repeated injuries, the defender.
Yeah, nothing to add there. It was just too often.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, I do like him as a player overall. And Nash King, I think the questions will linger over his point of difference, but he can continued to show his contested game was top end.
I was, you've mirrored your thoughts there. I would have just said point of difference, ? Really.
Yep. And Damon Hollow, I think he proved he has the skill, the mindset, the versatility and the weapons for AFL footy at both Calder and Vic Metro level.
He's one of the Lockie Charlsons and Tom Anastastopoulos of last year kind of picks you could think of where you're like, their year hasn't been, well, he's actually had a better year, I think, than both of those two did last year. And both of those two got picked up. So that's after those two got picked up last year, and they're great players, but they're a certain need. I think a club does take him because I think he will suit the need of a certain club with his running patterns. And he's done enough this year to prove he can perform really well at the best level.
And Isaac Kakko got three words for him: never went missing. And I think that is such a testament to a small forward. It's such a difficult role to play. Most of them will have off days, but it felt like if he didn't kick a bag, then he set up lots of goals. Never went missing.
I think as well, with that pressure on him as well, he never wavered. Like to have that Essendon NGA behind him, you don't want to let that side down. And with the emergence of Joe Berry really quickly, there's also that pressure to maintain form, but he did that all year.
It'll be a comparison we'll no doubt go into depth on at some stage, the Joe Berry versus Isaac Kakko one. Yep. Geelong, Xavier Ivasich, I think he's mastered everything in his control. The only question marks that linger are maybe his size, which is out of his control.
Oh, I'd agree. Still think he's in he's in good hands now. I think he'll make it.
I think he makes it as well, definitely. And then Lockie Jakes, his composure, his athleticism, his read of the play all continued to elevate as the season went on.
They did. I'm glad they did, because at the start of the year, I was a bit too worried. It was just becoming kick out, kick out, kick out, and he was never able to show any of his traits. But I'm glad he did, because he's proven that he's capable of being that real athletic halfback type.
Kicking efficiency quite good as well there from Lockie Jakes. And River Stevens, a father-son prospect, is one who has some AFL attributes, but does he have the X factor at his size?
That would be the question I have. Being father-son, obviously, does help his case a little bit. I think if North are to take him, it's a real development-type work there, that it won't be straight away. But he's had a pretty good season.
Yep, certainly. Gippsland, we'll move into the girls now as well. Gippsland's girls' season came to an end. Ash Centra had the season everyone expected, probably with a bow and ribbon on top.
It was taking the piss.
Yep.
That's just Centra stuff.
Zali Gallagher has the tenacity and speed for AFLW, but question marks linger over her kicking efficiency off halfback.
I do think at this stage of where the AFLW is still, that those pressure factors and that make a bigger difference at this point, so I do like her chances.
Yep. Jess Souden, her form plateaued this season, but her spasmodic bursts of form showed she has the skill set for AFLW.
Yeah, skill set is something you just got to take at face value. She does have the attributes to make it there.
Sandy, I think Daisy Flockart will start with, a consistent playmaker whose size is attractive.
Yeah, and I think she proved it at metro level as well. She's got a bit of bounce about her, you know, wherever she plays, and a lot of half back at times, but then can move forward and be a real offensive threat. And I think her development has been really good over these last 2 years. She was probably their most consistent performer over the year.
Yep. No, very well summed up. Sophie Mackay has all the tools to become a premier AFLW midfielder.
Yeah, she does. She 100%. I mean, I think she knew where she was going right from the start of the year, I do feel like you did see that in performances at time where she just was a little bit lackluster in terms of energy.
Yeah.
But she's still got that class you can't skip on.
Scout Howden, a work ethic who has been propelled into a work ethic that's propelled her into draft conversations.
Yeah, 100%. In terms of work rate and running capacity, she would be one of the fittest players in the in the whole, you know, talent league. So hopefully she does get her shot at the top level.
And then the Northern girls, Holly Ridewood, good pressure and showed her versatility and her tenacity as well for the contest was affirmed.
Yeah, and was a good marking target up forward as well. Liked to push outside of 50 a lot of the time and did hit the scoreboard. So she's definitely got a good chance, given her height as well. She's got a bit of versatility in her.
Zoe Hargreaves, strong and powerful around the contest. How do you see her season?
Pretty good, and I think she pushes herself forward even when she's behind a few stronger mids. She still finds a way to elevate her game and show a point of difference, whether that's with pressure or just inside contest work. She finds a way to get herself involved, and she, great season.
Talia Plunkett, you've been a fan of as well.
Yeah, she's one as well for Northern that has performed really well all year. The offensive threat she provides in transition, I thought, has been terrific all year. She can do well in the contest, and I'm not sure if she goes this year, but she's put a good case forward, I think, at the very least.
Certainly. Now we'll move into our preliminary final.
Tassie girls.
Oh, Tassie girls, yes, of course. Mackenzie Williams.
Drafted, but I'd still have questions on her kicking. That's just the one thing I think needs to tidy up quite a lot, but she knows how to find the footy.
Lucy Thompson's power really lends itself to the next level, and I think her midfield work was really strong this year.
Yeah, 100%. Wish we got to see her in a few more of the games in the back end, but she was awesome all year. I've got the names on here if you want me to read them. Yeah. Ava Reid. Her size is just the one thing I question, and her versatility at the next level, because she knows how to kick goals inside forward 50 and be a marking target, but her presence outside of the forward 50 is what I question.
Yeah, does her skill set align with what is required at the next level is questionable.
Meg Harrison's season, pretty consistent. Had a you know, a few games of pretty good dominance and put a good foot forward.
Nothing to add. Yeah, no, well summed up.
And then Sophie Stron is the last one who... again, injury kind of hurt her in the back end of the year, but she's so powerful and has real good knack for just the tactics of the game, which I really like. I think she's one that would definitely be in good combo.
She'll be a steal. I think wherever she goes as a result of the injury, I think she would have pushed herself as high as top 25 calculations had she had an uninterrupted run. But yes, our prelim finals previews, Sandringham versus Dandenong Stingrays is the first one. These are being played as a doubleheader at RSEA Park on Sunday. So let's have a chat about this very quickly. I think Sonny Campbell-Farrell is going to have an important role for Dandenong in the midfield. He is a very accountable midfielder, and they've got Harvey Langford and they've got Cooper Hines, who can match it as a 1-2 punch with Murphy Reid and Levi Ashcroft. But yeah, they're going to need someone to try and stop that depth. And I think someone like a Sonny Campbell-Farrell has done that a little bit in the last couple of weeks. And I also think Elwood Peckett and Harry Doughton, who will probably go through the midfield stages, are going to have to play the games of their lives if they're going to match them in the midfield.
It's such a hard one to analyse against the Sandy, because sometimes you think, well, if you beat them on tactics, you'll beat them, but then you've got to beat the talent after that. I do think Sandy are not easy to beat, but I think their tactics, like I said, a lot of their midfielders love to just run forward and they're not as committed to defence as a few other teams. That's just the nature of a few of their players. And the one thing I noticed this week, and you'll see this on our Instagram tomorrow, we've got a few head-to-head matchups with statistics, but on average, how many tackles do you think Levi Ashcroft has averaged this year?
2.5.
2.1. Murphy Reid?
3.
1.9. Yeah, it might be mixed, those two, but I remember those two numbers. They're not a big pressure team, Sandy. They have
a lot more of the ball generally.
Yeah, but they have a lot more of it. But I just think if Dandy can really get their offensive running going, the only thing, the other question that I have as well is they're going from Shepley to RSEA, and that is a pretty big upgrade in terms of size. So it does suit Sandy. This is home ground advantage to a
T. Yeah, it is. So yeah, everything's against Dandenong. I think there's two other players that I think can really expose Sandy. Tyron Amu up forward. So I think Sandringham's backline is exceptional, but do they have the 200 plus centimetre key defender that can match it with someone who's as strong as Tyron Amu? I think he has a big role to play taking some contested marks. And I also think Jordan Doherty, if he can beat Brody Finlay in the ruck and beat him around the ground as well, if he can give his midfielders first juice, you talk about the pressure Sandy don't always bring, that will go a long way to Dandenong neutralising. But a tip as we go through?
I don't know. It's Sandy. I just don't know by how much. I worry. It's really the ground factor, I think, that's a really massive advantage for Sandy. I think even if Dandenong play their best game, they still lose by about 3 or 4 goals. It's just the depth and that understanding where to run and everything. It's just so in Sandy's favour. I'd say Sandy by 26.
I've got Sandy by 3 goals, by 18. Now, the GWVV Oakley preview will do slightly differently. And I know that you've got a different view to this to what I do. That's why we're doing it differently. Yeah. I've got Oakley winning. You've got GWV winning. We're going to speak for 60 seconds each about why we have these views. I'm going to start with Oakley and start now. I think that we saw a few weeks ago that Oakley, that we've seen their form in the back end of the season has been absolutely phenomenal. Liam Callaghan down back and shut down Jonty Fall. They've got a back line that's got so much depth on paper. They've got Blake Lidler, who's so speedy coming out of the back line, sets up so much play. Tom Wenzel, whose kicking efficiency can break the game open. They've got Lucas Tovey down there as well, who's got that athleticism and can stop GWV's tall forward line. They've got Charlie McKinnon, who can take marks, but I just think that Oakley will be able to stop them down back. I think the depth in the midfield is just too strong. Yes, you've got Jack O for GWV, who's been very good, but even if you're very generous to Jack O and saying he is against a Zane Cochran, then they've got no one to stop a Finn O'Sullivan and a Jagger Smith, and I just think that's going to be too hard to stop. On the wings, you've got Paddy Reshko, who runs so hard both ways. They've got no one to stop that GWV. And then up forward, they're just so well balanced. You've got Kobe Askew, who saw his form on the weekend. You've got all these little fleet-footed small forwards, Kane Emery as well. And then you've also got the players who can take marks like Charlie Richardson and Quinn McKay. And I just don't think any GWV player is going to be able to stop them, because I think their Achilles heel is in the back line. And I think the midfielders and the forwards can both kick goals. Went for a minute and 21.
I'm not going to rush as much, but the first thing you're missing is Rebels beat them only 3 weeks ago. Yep. And the one thing I looked at, the stats of that game, Rebels doubled their tackles over Oakley. So as much as, yes, Oakley's individual talent could run you through a midfield and run you out of any danger, the Rebels apply pressure. And that can mean quite a lot. There was no Foss last time, but I feel like I'm trying to defend Rebels rather than say why they'll win. Ollie Hannaford kicking 5 last time is your question mark. It's obviously they're going to shut him down.
Blake Lidler shut him down the second half, I think.
He still kicked two. Point is, he has to, that is the question I have with the Rebels. Do they have someone who's going to stand up as well if Ollie can't kick 5 goals, which it is 80% chance he won't kick 5 goals again if the Chargers are smart. But I do like their chances through the midfield. I mean, they stuck up well with height. You've got someone like Jack Owen there who's consistent. The loss of Sam Lawler is the one that really kind of hurts them, because he was quite big in that game a few weeks ago. So to see how they replace his presence in there is interesting. Reece Unwin gets back into form. You've got a little bit of an extra element there. He kicks those 3 goals he should have last time. That's your winning factor as well in this game. But I think they're every chance, the Rebels. If they've beaten them once, they can beat them again. They'll be pretty confident going into this game, especially the fact Oakley play at Warrawee, which is even smaller than what Dandenong do at Shepley. So this ground does suit the Rebels who train out of Mars, which are pretty similar dimensions. So I'm excited for this. If you had to give a tip, I mean, I think whoever gets through is pretty deserving of a grand final. Yep. Yeah, actually, let me, firstly, the way this fixturing has worked, this should be Country 1 v Metro 2, but it's been different the way it's worked out. This, if you were to go off a ladder, this is 3rd v 4th against 11th v 13th. So that is quite interesting. I feel like we would never see that. In any other footy league. But Tip, who have you got? I mean,
I think my
head says Oakley as well. I don't think the Rebels can do it 2 times in a row, because I just think that unfamiliarity the first time they played worked into the Rebels' hands and without Lawler. But my heart does say the Rebels do get... They're on a roll. That's the truth now. I'll say Rebels by 10 points in probably the best final of the week. Move to the girls' prelims now. Oakley and Dandy. I guess, you know, Dandy again, they've got to do it the hard way. But you got to beat the best to be the best. And I think the question here is, how do Dandy beat Oakley rather than the other way around?
I think we've seen that Dandenong can challenge Oakley in the last 12 months. They've played them 3 or 4 times. They can really go with them. They just struggled to put it on the scoreboard. I think someone like an Evelyn Connolly, who averages more than 1.5 goals per game, has a really important role to play. And Nalu Brothwell, who's found some strong form in the back end of the year. Both of those girls need to make sure they put it on the scoreboard, as well as some others, because the issue has been putting it on the scoreboard for Dandenong when they've played them in the past.
Well, Naomi Simons, the first time they played, and they haven't played since the first game of the year, and it was Oakley won by 50. Like, it was just I think it was close for the start, and then
and then
Oakley just blew them away. I just question that the depth of general skill for Dandenong, can that carry them through? Can they afford a lot of skill errors against an Oakley team that's pretty efficient in transition and makes the most of their inside 50s?
I think that whoever has the job on Emma McDonald has a really big role to play as well. A quick tip, I'd say Oakley get through by a couple of goals. I do think Dandy will make it competitive.
Yeah, Oakley, I'll say by about 22. The second game is Eastern and Geelong. And yeah, Geelong is so hard because, like I said, they're either extremely on or they're extremely off. Like, I saw them lose by 60 against Oakley earlier this year, and then they come out against Tassie, who are in better form, arguably, and they beat them by 30 points. Yep. So, hard one to analyse. They did beat Eastern by 35 early in the year, but that was with Metro, and Eastern's team was very bottom-age loaded, so not really a lot to take out of that game. Yeah, I watched Geelong on the weekend. I think, geez, these guys are a chance.
Mm-hmm.
I still think Eastern's depth. They're in good form as well.
I think East, that's exactly what I've got. I think they're just too deep and they've got too many avenues to goal compared to Geelong, so I've got Eastern winning it as well.
By
20.
Similar thoughts there. The one thing we skipped over before is Morris Medal predictions.
They will be announced by the podcast next week, I believe.
Top 3.
I will give my top 3 for the boys, and then do the girls as well. My top 3 for the boys, I've got Josh Smiley winning it. I think his coach's form has been a little bit underrated. I think he will win it. Jagger Smith second. And then I am going Harvey Langford third. My only question about Harvey at not getting higher is just because I think Cooper Hines and Jordan Doherty will take some votes off him, but I think he'll still sneak into the top three, which is great that three top pick prospects are going to finish in the top three if it panned out that way.
Well, it's weird because I feel like it doesn't always work. We saw Pat Hughes win it last year, so like it can be just that consistent role player. I've got Jagger winning it.
Yep.
I think someone like Lockie Jakes is a sneaky one to finish in that top three. Don't know where, but... And then, Josh Smiley, I think, finishes close to Jagger, but I don't think he wins necessarily. I think there's games he'll get those full votes, but there's just some others. Easton losing a lot in the back end didn't help.
That's a good point.
But Oakley lost all year, so I guess that argument doesn't stack up. But Jagger had, 50 in one game, so I guess his form.
I just think Josh Smiley really catches the eye as well with how big he is, and he's under the umpires' noses. In the girls, I've got Ash Centra. I think she just really sticks out with her skill set. I've got Grace Baloney coming second. I think her season was excellent. And then I've got Sierra Greaves coming third. I think every time Western won, she would have polled three votes, and she would have polled some votes in their losses as well.
Yeah, interesting. I've got a smoky to win. I reckon Sarah Pousey's going to win it.
Yep.
I just think she catches like that power and natural strength.
We've seen an Oakley smoky go high before with Abby Vicino.
Yeah. So that's why I just have this feeling. Centra's my second. I do think she can win it though. And Gemma Reynolds as well has had a really good season for Dandy when Dandy wins, she's playing well. So probably get some votes there. And that's all for this week. We're going to do it differently next week. We're going to have a bit of a grand final show and give a bit of awards and go, obviously, review the prelims, probably a bit more game by game, and then, preview the grand finals for the boys and the girls. So thank you all for watching. Check out our socials for more content like head-to-head matchups with a lot of stats in there. Thank you all for watching. We'll see you in the next episode.